Okay, so I'm Elizabeth Rosiello. I'm the founder and CEO of Aza Finance. We were founded in 2013 in Nairobi, Kenya. So one of the first to come out of the Silicon Savannah and one of the very first African fintechs. At the time, we were called BitPesa. We rebranded a few years ago, 2018. Our West African team members didn't like the Swahili word, regulators. They didn't like the PESA, regulators didn't like the BIT, so we went with Aza. And Aza Finance now transacts over $3 billion worth of transactions a year. We service African corporates and globals working in Africa. We work with African fintechs, African banks, and we sell them foreign exchange. So we buy and sell African currencies, and we settle them over our own infrastructure.
Oh, really? So obviously, I would ask this with the instability in most of the African currency, particularly Nigeria. And we're beginning to see that right now. Kenya, right? How are you?
Great question. So, currency volatility is the reason we started this company because I had been working for a long time in microfinance and I saw that depreciating currencies were affecting the balance sheet of these institutions and they had no options to trade in or out. They also couldn't lend in local currencies. So, I kept asking the question, where are the local currency market? And I realized there weren't a lot of players. There was no what we call liquidity. So if you wanted to go in or out of a currency, it was very slow, it was very difficult. And a lot of the banks didn't offer African currency pairs against each other. They only offered them against the dollar. So our mission was to jump in the swimming pool and start offering African currency pairs. And we believe that by offering liquidity, where a corporate or a bank or an institution can trade in and out of their currency and pay invoices in local currencies, other local African currencies, it makes it easier to get in and out of the currency. So if there is volatility, you can change the currency. And I think people think that when currencies are volatile, nobody wants to trade. It's obviously the opposite. When currencies are volatile, people want to trade more. They want to trade more frequently. Instead of paying an invoice once a quarter, they want to pay it every day. You know, they don't want to hold that currency risk. So we really do need liquidity providers to be able to trade in and out of currencies.
Okay, let's break it down a bit. Security provider, how do you hedge, right? So the currency is lower. How do you hedge against the inflation? How do you hedge against the rates? How do you sell the rate? Because in the morning, the rate can be one, and by the end of the day or the next day, it can be one.
Sure. Well, the only way to truly hedge risk is to not gain a position. So we buy and sell instantly. That's why we have our own infrastructure. We don't hold positions. We're not a hedge fund. We're not an asset manager. We're not even an account holder. We're a payment processor, an IMBO, International Money Transfer Organization. So we get in and we get out. And we look for buyers and sellers and we match them. And anything else takes a position. And then exactly, you're exposed to that risk. As you might know, it's very difficult to hedge or choose derivatives in African currencies. Most markets, even if you were to find someone willing to sell you a hedge in local currency, they don't what we call actually deliver. So when you get to the 3 month mark, you might have to renegotiate or they're very expensive and don't make sense. So we believe daily trading, making sure you're in and out of your currency, not gaining long positions is the way to go.
Next level, let's go to you as a person. It's typically easy for most people to say, hey, I would rather work outside the African markets because of the challenges. What drives you? Why did you decide to stay in the African market?
So I'm from New York City. I grew up in Queens, New York, which has more ethnicities than any other county in America. Every single kid in my elementary school class spoke a different language. You know, at every bus stop coming home was a different ethnicity. So I was really looking to travel the world. And I went to Europe and I worked in banking. and I spoke European languages, and I was really dissatisfied with what I saw. It was also the end of the market crash, so I was looking for something more. And a lot of my friends went to Asia at the time because that was where the boom was happening. But I got a job with Muhammad Yunus, who had just won the Nobel Peace Prize in microfinance. And so I went to Nairobi, Kenya. And I hadn't studied the region. I didn't speak the language. I went down there really for the job. And I thought maybe I'd stay for 6 months or a year. And I ended up staying 8 years in Kenya and had my kids there and in the hospital there. And then I ended up moving to Nigeria. And then I moved over to Senegal. And for me, I found the culture across the African continent much more similar to Queens, New York, than I did when I was living in Germany or Switzerland. I felt really alive, and I felt like there was a lot for me to learn about resilience, about persistence, about ambition, and about markets. And also, I saw a lot of very inspiring women. And I met when I did my microfinance fieldwork, and I was really inspired to stay. And I thought there was a lot to build, and I was quite excited about what I was seeing in the financial industry at the time. It was right at the start of the Kenyan banking boom and the introduction of mobile money to banking. And I thought it was just so much more fascinating than what I had seen in Europe.
Well, lovely. What do you think about blockchain and digital currency?
Sure. So when we first started the company,
especially with respect to integrating it or having a foothold in Africa.
Sure. So in 2013, when we first launched the company, I actually was the first trader to trade Bitcoin against Kenyan shilling with an app. Yeah, there were some informal groups trading, and there was a wallet at the time that just started and left, but we really were the first formal exchange, and we were called BitPesa. And the reason we used Bitcoin at the time was because I was trying to send Kenyan shilling to Canada for a client, and I couldn't find a way to access CAD or Canadian dollar. And I found a Bitcoin exchange there, and they let us do it. And also our first seed investor was very excited about Bitcoin, and they were like, we'll give you $50,000 if you figure out how to use Bitcoin. So we were like, okay, let's use it. It was very cool early days. We were able to trade with China. We were able to trade with Euro without having bank accounts there. That's pretty exciting. But what we realized, it was very difficult for consumers at the time on the other side to access it, to either trade in or out. So even if we could convince our customers in Kenya to buy or sell using M-Pesa, you know, instant on-ramp, off-ramp, it was very hard. On the other side, the infrastructure wasn't there. So we went ahead and built our own infrastructure. We opened up bank accounts in the UK and Europe, and we found fiat providers in other markets. And then we really didn't need Bitcoin in the middle for settlement. But what we did start to see is people wanted it as a savings. People wanted it as an asset. So we still sold it. It became less of our total portfolio. And over the years, it's waxed and waned in popularity. Now I'd say we sell almost no Bitcoin. And what we do is sell almost $1 billion of stable coins. And a few years ago, people are really...
Daily, yeah.
Yearly. So, you know, I think people really got excited about stablecoins just about a year or two ago, and the uptake in the African markets has been tremendous. I think also a lot of corporates globally are accepting stablecoins, and a lot of fintechs are using them. And so, we haven't really seen any of the African CBDCs or the central bank digital currencies take off in any real way. I mean, obviously, there are pilot projects in a few markets, which I won't name, but you know, no one's really using them at all. And there's the system isn't really excellent. But stablecoin is now the hot digital currency. And I guess I'm old enough to have survived a few market cycles. And let's see what the future holds. But obviously, digital currencies are a part of it.
Okay. Digital currencies will play a huge part in it. There's been a conversation about having a central currency, right? Will digital currencies help with that?
I'm really going to age myself now, but you know, I wrote my undergraduate thesis on the euro and the eurozone. And one problem the euro had was that all the European countries did not have the same economic strength, right? We have 55 markets in Africa, 55 current currencies, and there's so much differentiators in the GDP, in the monetary policy, InfoSec policy, very difficult to believe that there will be a single African currency. There's not even a single African bank switch. Even in East Africa, where you have the East African community, you know, you do have some passport and customs and visa similarity, but it's still quite segregated. And definitely in the West African rank and the Central African rank, so you have a lot of disparity in the 20 countries that are in those unions. So I think we have a ways to go. I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm just saying in the next 5 years, it would be difficult, I believe.
What role do you think women would play? You obviously have experienced a lot with women in Africa.
Yeah.
And luckily, when you were in Kenya, that really was a peak period, right? With respect to either technology or technological penetration and integration, a lot of tech startups. Looking back, what do you think is the role either the government can play or the NGOs can play, just like supporting women?
Yeah.
How do you see that plays with respect to lifting Africa from where it is?
Yeah, well, we're half of humanity, so it would be nice to be recognized.
Yes, true.
You know, just saying. I think it's still, I was just like texting with my female friends last night, and I'm like, we have so much more work to do for our daughters. You know, the questions I still get from investors, like, how old are your kids? Are you going to have the energy to keep working, you know?
Wow,
and
really?
Come on. Those are the easy questions. I mean, I started this company when my daughters were 1 and 2 years old.
Okay.
I've been doing this since my kids were there, and I have a 4-year-old boy now. And people still ask if I can work while having kids. I mean, to me, it just boggles the mind. We run one of the most dynamic teams and, you know, the most difficult business models for over a decade. Mm-hmm. And people still can't believe what they see. And that tells me a lot about how people consider other people that are different from them, whether it's race or religion or gender. You know, they really struggle to see with their eyeballs. You know, they see with their brains and what they've learned. Mm-hmm. So it would be great if we continue to work on breaking down those barriers. I think it has to be an intentional, as you said, it has to be, you know, I do believe in quotas. I do believe in intentional programming and things and policies to force change. Because it's a long time we haven't been recognizing half human rights.
Yes. And especially in
places where there's low GDP per capita. I think that tends to be the place where you don't have childcare. Even for me, I'm extremely privileged. I've like gone to the best schools, etc. I struggle when I don't have childcare. You know, I can't work my best, and I spend, I think, most of my income on childcare. So when you have a low GDP per capita, that's one of the main problems.
Okay, that's interesting. So, do you foresee any better regulation in the future with respect to Africa and currency, monetary fund?
Well, it's interesting when we started where you said, you know, there's been so much volatility in West Africa and now it's coming to Kenya. It's true. We used to joke that the Kenyan shilling only moved one day out of 365. And for 364 days, it was flat. Now we're seeing times when the Kenyan shilling has a double rate. Who would have thought?
Catch up this show on www.africatechradio.com.